everybody. In the summer of 2021, I had the honor and privilege of interviewing Ryan and Jennifer Keplin. We were all in Paradise Valley, Montana, just south of Livingston, at the Music Ranch. That's where I'm located right now. Tomorrow, my wife Amy and I will be leaving for Ryan Keplin's Summerfest. Right now, it's July 9th, 2022, just for some context. We are days away from the moment Rory Feek, Dion Pride, legendary singer-songwriter Leona Williams, myself and Amy, and many more country music artists will be stepping onto the newly branded Music Ranch North Dakota stage. Each night, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, will close with an entertaining and energetic country music show from the Ryan Keplin Band. Now, this is a huge event that happens in a very rural part of North Dakota. Ryan and Jen have built this festival, along with their home, all from the ground up, just north of Rolet. I hope I said that right. It's a town at the very top of North Dakota, super close to the Canadian border. Ryan has developed a huge following with his Fiddlin' Lefty moniker that he earned through his distinctive technique of left-handed fiddle playing. What stood out to me in this interview is something I already knew about Ryan and Jen. It's why I wanted to talk to them. They are all about family. Ryan carries on the tradition of the native Métis culture in his musical presentation. His persona on stage is genuinely who he is. He is a warm, friendly, and energetic man who truly appreciates people and has a passion for preserving his musical and family heritage. So if you're wondering, Métis, they have their own culture and they have their own twist on music. So for over 30 years, Ryan Keplin has been touring internationally, and he brings his Métis music traditions with him in the form of a country music show. I also got to speak with Jen for a good portion of the interview. She's not just a supportive sidekick. She is very empathetic, warm, and she's a driven person who succeeds professionally in her field. She also 100% supports her husband, her family, and this huge event they call the Ryan Keplin Summerfest. Guys, I'm going to tell you, it's incredibly hard to do an event of this scale, especially when you're in such a rural area with limited access to big vendors and services that can help with a festival. But Ryan and Jen have sunk their own blood, sweat, and tears, and their own money into this festival, and they continue to do so post-COVID when it honestly just seems harder than ever. They have no idea who's coming based on the unpredictability of the border requirements regarding COVID. You got to remember high gas prices are going on right now, inflation, but people hopefully will still come. It's inspiring for me to see them working so hard and pushing forward with a great musical lineup and a chance for people to forget about their worries and cares and connect with one another, family, community, and music. This is what Ryan and Jennifer Keplin are all about. Building community through music is also what Frank and Karen Smith are all about here at Music Ranch Montana. Right away, they recognized a shared vision and common goals when they met Ryan and Jen. Frank Smith has a book titled, I Always Wanted to Build Things, and that's exactly what he does. Frank has empowered Ryan and Jennifer, and me and my wife, to be the best we can be, and he builds tools that help us advance the common goal and the vision that we all seem to have. Frank built Ryan Keplin a Freightliner box truck that converts into a mobile pop-up stage. He did this when he heard that Ryan was wanting to do Christmas benefit shows in small communities all around him in North Dakota, and he needed something to do it mobile and quick. Just pop up right in the middle of the winter in 0 degrees, folks. I mean, it's not for me, right? But they're out there doing it. He's sawing on a fiddle, entertaining people, and it's sub-zero. I can't even imagine. Well, then Frank, he would go out to the Ryan Keplin farm in the festival area. Frank and Karen would, and Frank decided to build a nice addition to their already fantastic barn and music venue that they had there on their place. I'm excited to say that I was even hired, and I have no actual skills for this, but I got to be part of building what is now referred to by Ryan and Jennifer as Music Ranch North Dakota. Another music ranch. How cool is that? Last fall, I was able to spend about a week or so in North Dakota. This is fall of 2021. I was there with a crew of people from Music Ranch Montana, and we were working from sun up to sun down in the bitter cold. Now, keep in mind, I'm from Tennessee, so I was really the only one bundled up. But now they have this new additional building, and it will have a soft opening in the festival this coming week. So I know that's a long intro, but I wanted to update you before I get into this interview that was recorded 11 months ago. So keep in mind that when this was recorded, COVID was still keeping them from having their festival back in 2021. The building plans that I just mentioned, they were underway, but no actual construction had begun yet. Ryan and Jen just seemed completely blown away that Frank was wanting to be a part of their vision. Now, this is a long interview, but I think it's great. And I think it's important to preserve what Ryan and Jen talked about. I'm really excited that I got to sit down with them. And I really hope you enjoyed as much as I did. We are in the Music Ranch VIP room, Music Ranch, Montana, in Livingston, Montana. And I'm out here for a few weeks, able to hang out with my good friends Ryan and Jennifer Keplin. And it's great to have you all here on the podcast. Thanks for doing this.
It's great a pleasure.
It's a pleasure there, Adam.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to know y'all, I think it would be 3 years ago or 2 years ago.
Right. It's been about 3 years since
we
first met here. Yes.
Yeah. Your band came here, and I just remember most of the acts that come here are acoustic or two or three, and that's just the ones I've seen. I know there's bands that come. But when y'all showed up, I was so excited because I saw a full, huge country band. And y'all come out and y'all just burnt the stage up, man, for what I said, it's about a 3 hour show, 2 to 3 hours.
Usually, when we play for Music Ranch, yes, it's about a couple hour show.
Yeah.
Whenever we travel, yes, it's with family. So, and, yeah. You know, a lot of the band members are family. And, you know, it's a lot of practicing at home, and we take that show on the road.
Yeah.
You know, and usually whenever we travel on the road, you're going to see a lot of our kids with us, maybe even grandkids, you know, who knows.
Right.
But that's just the way it is, and we try to bring that to everyone that loves music.
Yeah, I mean, it's evident. Like when you said, you know, you practice at home, you can tell a band that just shows up and throws it together. I've been guilty of that. And then there's bands like y'all that show up and, oh, yeah, they're tight. They've rehearsed and practiced. They're ready to roll. And then you show up with all of your family, and that's a rare thing. Mm-hmm. Most of the time you see 5-6 dudes show up in a van or a bus, and they do their thing, and maybe they get to a point where they have a record deal and they're out there and they're on the radio. Now they get a bus for their family. What I love about y'all is y'all are like, hey, we're bringing, family comes first. We're bringing the family. And even what you've established, and this is what I learned after I met you, in North Dakota, y'all have established a music festival. And I want to hear about that. How did you go from just you're playing gigs with your band to let's start a festival?
Well, it's always been a dream for me to have a festival and call it my own. Although I played for many other festivals out there, and I've seen how people would congregate, come to music festivals, it'd be a way for audience to enjoy, laugh, dance, and I wanted to do that. Bringing that into our home area, which is Rolette, North Dakota.
Right.
So, or the Turtle Mountains. Did I say that right?
Yeah. Well, we're originally from the Turtle Mountains, from the Turtle Mountain Band of Chippewa Nation. We're Anishinaabe, also Métis.
Yeah.
And we currently live, or the festival is located just right off the reserve. It's near a small town called Rolette, North Dakota.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So anyway, we wanted to start a festival, and we did. We started it about in the year 2015. We end up, throughout the years, I have established, just like with you, relationships with musicians, and mm-hmm. and figured out and found out people that we would like to come to our festival, and kind of based that with our entertainers, you know. So we end up starting in 2015, bringing in the people, and it was a success. So the second year, of course, we decided to do it again, and usually on the second weekend or so, second or third weekend in July, and it's been a success ever since. So yeah. We've had a huge crowd that come out there. It's family oriented. In fact, we hope that you bring your kids, and you know, we have such a huge place there where they could listen to music. We have some hay bales. We have playground equipment. So it's just, you know, family oriented.
Nice. Playground people, equipment too?
Well, not equipment. We have the hay bales, which we call it.
Yeah, okay.
Playground equipment. But you'd be surprised, even the hay bales, of how many kids are playing on hay bales.
Oh, yeah. Jumping from.
Yes.
Yeah.
And a culvert for a slide.
Yes.
So nice.
It's amazing how much fun they have out there.
Oh, but all of that is mingled in with music. So a lot of the music and the Métis music is as far as what I play. So, you know, we'll bring in country acts, of course, but a lot of it is geared toward the Métis music. And I think Jennifer probably could do a better explanation with that as far as the Métis background, Jen.
Yeah, let's talk about the native background to the music, because you're not just playing country music. You're preserving some important elements.
Yes.
From the Métis traditions, is right. That correct?
With your music? A lot of some of the songs that I do, you'll hear me, and it will bring in some Mi'kmaq music, Mi'kmaq language.
Right.
So, you know, with that, even though I'm singing a song, I'll incorporate the Mi'kmaq language along with the English, of course, and then just sing it as such. My dad was a fluent Métis speaker, and from then, he'd teach me how to say words or phrases, and I'd bring that into my music, even though I wasn't a fluent Métis speaker. So he would really help me out. His first language was the Métis language, like I said, but it was he was my huge supporter as far as including the Mi'kmaq or Métis language in my music.
Was your dad a musician?
No. You know what? Make a long story short. He bought my first fiddle when I was like 11 or 12 years old. He knew how to tune a fiddle for some odd reason.
Wow.
By ear.
That's impressive.
But he didn't know how to play it. And he didn't know how to play guitars or nothing else. But he knew how to tune a fiddle for whatever reason. But my grandfather was an excellent fiddle player.
Okay.
So I don't know if that's how he kind of developed a feeling for listening to the tune or how to tune a fiddle or how he did it. But he knew how to tune my fiddle. When I first started playing, I didn't have a tuner. I didn't have anything. He tuned my fiddle
for me. Your dad. He was the tuner.
Yeah. it's just really funny story, but he couldn't play to save his life. You know?
That's amazing. Now, you say your grandpa played fiddle. Do you remember that?
No. My grandfather died in 1962 before I was born.
Okay.
So he died of, I believe it was stomach cancer, but I have a lot of recordings of the 8 tracks. You know, back in the day of him performing at different maybe bush dances, what they call just moving from house to house and having some sort of entertainment along. I'm talking about the 1950s, 1960s.
And they were recording this back then.
Yes.
Wow.
So with that being said, I think that's where I generated maybe my talent or interest for music.
Yeah. So what age were you when you were discovering this and listening to these tapes?
Of course, I remember having that interest, but actually physically picking up a fiddle around the age of 12 years old.
Wow.
Everything is self-taught. You know, I self-taught myself how to play You Are My Sunshine.
Nice.
And it kind of took off from there. Of course, I've had a lot of... a lot of elders that influenced my playing as well, and just kind of followed them along the trail. And some of the elders back in the day were my best friends.
Yeah.
Why? Because they were fiddle players. I wanted to be amongst fiddle players. So I did play the fiddle. I hung around with the elders, just like I play for the wedding dances, nursing homes, whatever it was, retirement homes. And they'd bring me along with, and I was just this young kid wanting to learn and just follow along with them. So I had an uncle, his name was Lawrence Kemplin, that really brought me and tucked me under his wing and just brought me to different places like that.
Yeah.
You know? So, which was really nice, and I ended up following along, And that's how I basically learned. You know that in a lot of recording, musicians on a tape cassette, taking that home, if I heard somebody play a tune that I liked, I'd take that home and learn it by ear. You know, so I don't read any notes. I'm a self-taught musician, and that's just the way it came to me.
Yeah.
So
Ryan's fiddle that he plays today was his Uncle Lawrence's fiddle.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
So
the one you travel and tour with.
Was that?
The one you're playing.
Yes.
Wow.
That fiddle was given to me. He passed on in 1989, I believe it was, when he passed away. And he was like my best friend. I'll be honest with you. He was my best friend. And he was a 70-year-old man, plus, at least. But anyway, he'd take me to the dances and he'd say, "Mon vieux, you're getting better than I am." And "Mon vieux" means my nephew. And "you're getting better than I am. And whenever I die, I want you to have my fiddle."
Oh my goodness.
So sure enough, the day came and he passed away. And like I said, it was just like I lost my best buddy. But anyway, his wife at that time called me over to their house, and she had laying on their bed four different fiddles. And she said, "Ryan, I know Uncle wanted you to have one of his fiddles."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "I'm here to give you one of them. I don't know which one you'd like, whichever one, but there was four of them." I said, "Auntie, the only one that I really care about, and I don't know if it has any kind of value behind it, but I want it, is the one that he was currently playing. And that's the one I have, and I've been playing since 1989.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's a really good sounding fiddle, and I'll never part with it.
That's amazing. And did he learn from your grandfather?
You know, he could have been. It could have been. Yeah. I don't know where he learned from, but I'm just saying it's passed down from generation to generation to generation. But as I see right now, you know, there was a handful of fiddle players back then. Now you can't even get maybe two or three people, you know, in our area that are even interested in picking it up. So I'm hoping somewhere down the line that I could help restore that and maybe help someone out or a youngster out that wants to play fiddle.
Yeah.
And our festival, the Rye Kaplan Summerfest, kind of promotes that as well. So we're trying to find new entertainment, trying to give the younger people a shot of entertaining and showing their talents as well.
Revitalizing the interest.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, you've got big crowds coming, and this is just exciting. That did you have the farm, and did when you got the place you're at, did you have that in mind? Was that part of why you got it?
That's why we purchased it.
Nice.
Yes. Yeah. So we ended up purchasing the land. I'm not quite certain on the date, but it's been, let's say, 10 years, I want to say. But since then, we've developed. We end up moving our house there. We like it there so much. But anyway, we end up building a pavilion just for the festival and celebrations and so forth.
Yeah.
But it's really a nice area. So you're surrounded by trees, grass, listening to music and watching people dance and having fun.
And unfortunately, the last 2 years, because of COVID, you haven't been able to have it.
Right. And the huge reason for that, Adam, is because we live so close to the Canadian border. We are like a 10-minute drive away from the Canadian border. But anyway, the Canadians are not able to cross. So a huge portion of our audience that did come to the Ryan Kaplan Summerfest were Canadians.
Yeah.
A large number of my entertaining, Adam, is done in Canada. So for me, I'm more known as a fiddle player in Canada than what I am in the States. So it's just because I live close to there and I travel more often there. So, yeah.
What's the gap from you said you're 12-ish,
mm-hmm.
get a fiddle, and you learn to play, and you're going around with the elders and you're learning to play. At what point did you start a band and then start traveling and playing?
So I'm going to start right at age 12. At age 12, I started learning the more music that was influenced me through the Manitoba fiddle players.
Yeah.
They had some great fiddle players, you know. So I listened to a lot of that from age 12 to, you know, 17 years old.
Yeah.
And then after that, I started teaching myself how to play different instruments. And then influencing that to play, mix my Métis music in with the country music.
Yeah.
You know, I found out I could do that. So it went from, you know, from 12 to 17, just playing, learning how to play as much reels, jigs, the breakdowns, the waltzes as I could.
Yeah.
And then after that, I mixed that into my own music with starting a band. And I don't care if we were playing covers, you know, maybe George Strait covers, whatever. It had the fiddle in it. It had any kind of song that I would sing, it's got to have the fiddle in it.
Right.
Yeah. So that's how it came to be with me as far as developing the band.
And you got a, did you mention the music contract?
The what?
Your first recording when you won the contest.
When I was, 15 years old, I ended up winning a fiddle contest. But the first prize was a free recording contract out of Winnipeg, Manitoba, of recording at through Sunshine Studios. Well, back in the day, Adam, from Winnipeg, Manitoba, your very best known fiddle players were known to travel through this Sunshine and record through the Sunshine recording studios.
Fiddle players.
So fiddle players. So I thought it was a huge honor. So I ended up placing first. Of course, I got the free recording.
Yeah.
And I ended up calling the album. I didn't know what I wanted to title the album. And I called it Ryan Keplin Fiddling Lefty. So it was titled that. And the name just kind of blew out, and everybody started calling me Fiddling Lefty.
Yeah.
You know, or Lefty. Very seldom, whenever you go into Canada, you hear Ryan, they're going to say, hey, Lefty. Hey,
really?
You know, Fiddling Lefty. So that's how the nickname of Fiddling Lefty actually kind of got going there in Canada. You know, so, but otherwise, that's really nice. I end up winning the recording contract. And that's where I kind of got my start, right there, as far as recording. Now, today, I have about 10 different recordings. So,
yeah.
Where I recorded throughout the years with
uh-huh.
them.
Do you take your band, or how do you when you go do a recording, how do you do that process?
When I do the recording, I'm all alone. I add all of the, 3/4 of the recordings that I do is all done by me, personally, as far as playing the bass guitar, the drums, the fiddle. If I need a pedal steel player or whatever, then I'll hire those people. Something that I don't want to play, I'll hire them to take on those challenging parts for me. But otherwise, for the most part, I do all my own work.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Now, going on the road, of course, is a different story. I got to have the band. And then, therefore, I have the relatives that are filling in and helping me out with...
relatives with and son now?
Yes, and son. Yes,
yeah.
Sonny's... I have a 15-year-old boy. His name is Sonny Keplin. And he's been playing since the start of COVID. And, you know, I just shared the story this morning, and I said there's a lot of negative things that happen with COVID. But there's also some good things that happen out of COVID. And one of them was... I and Jennifer and Sonny congregating at the table, eating and talking about, hey, how did your day go? You know, it seems like everything was going so fast. And I don't know, Adam, maybe this was God's way of telling us, hey, you need to slow down a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And that we did. And I honestly think if COVID didn't come around, Sonny wouldn't be playing guitar.
Wow.
I think that was his start. He was there. He's listening to me practice playing fiddle. I'd jump over on guitar, sing some songs. And then he all of a sudden starts picking this up and starts learning. So there's some good, you know, that came out of this COVID virus. And that is a few things for me that I've seen. So I think it's God's way of telling us all, hey, need to slow down a little bit. And I think it brought us back to our roots.
No doubt. Yeah. And I saw y'all doing these Facebook Lives, you and Sonny.
Yes.
And with everyone, he was just getting better and better and playing that guitar. And now we jammed the other night. And, I mean, I did the unthinkable for Johnny B. Goode. I'm going to mention this. So Johnny B. Goode, Chuck Berry songs in the key of A. So guitar players love it in the key of A. It's where they can find what they're, you know, the licks. And like a goofball, I was just already capoed in G, and I'm going, I'm just going to play like a little bluesy thing here, and I'll just do it in this key. And Sonny modulates to G and finds the licks in the midst of the song, and this guy just started learning last year, and I'm just like, whoa, I can't believe I did that to him, and wow, he nailed it anyway. So that was that was a big moment in my mind of, whoa, okay, he's a musician. I mean, he's not just a guy learning guitar.
I end up teaching him along the way. You know, I'm not a lead guitar player by any means, but I know how to, you know, teach him and develop how to play certain songs. And Johnny B. Goode is one, because Chuck Berry originally, I believe, played it in the key of C.
Oh, did he really? He
played it in the key of C. And that's where Sonny first learned how to play it. So with that being said, you know, I said, Sonny, if anybody's going to be playing the song, you could play the song anywhere. You could play this in C, and I started teaching that you could play this in A. You could play this, example, G. So that way, I think he was kind of prepared for that already, because I showed him a few licks of that.
But still, that's what I mean. Like, this, he on the fly changed and figured it out. I mean, that was great.
Ryan's trying to he's been showing him the Nashville system.
Yeah, the numbers.
So that he can follow other musicians that he's not comfortable with, or, you know.
That's awesome.
And that's one challenging, how would I say, technique of how to train musicians, because especially if you're not used to that, Adam. You know, I want to start my boy off right away with that Nashville system, because I wish they would have done it with me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of learning it years after it has already started, and I'm teaching it to my son now. But I wish I could have showed it to musicians all my life, throughout my life, in my own community, within my family. And I think, I think the music would be that much more tighter, so to speak, or solid. If you could do, rather than hollering out the key of A, key of G, or whatever, you know. So, you know, if you're doing the 1-4-5 thing and they know what it means, I think, you know, that's the best.
Well, it's almost a different language to so many people until the light bulb turns on. And then it's the easiest thing in the world.
That's the way it is for me. It's just like, gee, why weren't we doing this all year, you know, or all this time? Because it's just, for me, it's simple.
Right.
For somebody else, it might not be. And just like for Sonny, it just kicked in just a little bit ago, you know?
That's great.
And Sonny's been around music his entire life. He grew up with music in our house and traveled everywhere with us. And, you know, he's been on stage with his dad. He's very much like Ryan. He plays a lot of different instruments, not just the guitar. But he grew up and has been on stage with Ryan probably since he was about 2 years old. He started playing the spoons and became a hit with that. Everybody just loved it. Probably the best spoon player I've ever seen. He's just amazing. And then he kind of picked up the mandolin for a while and never actually learned how to play it, but he had the strumming down with it.
Yeah.
And so before a show, Ryan would have to unplug him. And then he caught on to that real quick, so he wasn't happy with
that. He wasn't very old, Adam. He was just a little tiny guy. He had a cowboy hat, but he thought he was doing the real deal on stage.
Yeah.
And I put him up there with the mandolin, and he starts strumming for me, and he said, Dad, I don't have my guitar cable in.
You can't hear it.
So, okay, I put the guitar cable in, and then he caught on to, Dad, I'm not plugged in to that over there. You know, it was just, trying to make him happy. So I plug him in and turn him down and put him on a mute, you know, and he was playing along with us. So
that's great.
That's just some.
And then he picked up the drums after that and played the drums for a while. And
I didn't know all this. Wow.
Yeah, so Sonny could be a drum player too. He could be an excellent drum player. But his main interest, Adam, is that guitar. Mm-hmm. I had him going with fiddle as well. Sonny could play some fiddle for you too, but his main interest is his guitar.
Well, when he's sitting there playing the fire out of Buckaroo, you know, I mean, you could just see he's in his element, and it's really cool.
Yeah.
And now we also have a pedal steel player at the table. That's what I've been hearing.
Yes, yes. So to make a long story short, I've always wished for a pedal steel player to be in the band. And in our neck of the woods, in North Dakota, we don't really get a lot of steel players. So what did I do one day? I ended up purchasing a pedal steel from online. I bought it for Jennifer, my wife. And we end up tinkering around with it a little bit, you know, just because I know how different bar things, whatever. I didn't know how to play it either. But I helped her along the way to say, hey, you could hit an A here. You could also hit an A here. You could hit an A here. So if you're up here, you might as well just slide down to this A, so it's not as much sliding and moving around, yeah. or you can move your legs to do this. So I showed her how to do some of that stuff without me not knowing and just learning along the way.
Yeah.
Until she came up with some of her own stuff as well, as far as playing on the pedal steel. So she doesn't know a whole lot, but it's, I told her, all I wanted to make me happy was to play along with me, even for two songs on stage. That's right. All I would care about. Now, if she could handle a whole night's work, that would be great. But I'd be satisfied with two songs. So she's still working on it.
Yeah.
She's still working on it. Yeah.
I want to hear about, so your perspective, so you, are you just minding your own business one day and a steel shows up on the porch?
Well, like, I love music and I wish I could be better. I can play a little bit of guitar, but you know, nothing too much, just basics. And but I'm really busy. I also I manage Ryan's entertainment business, but I also have a private business of my own.
Yeah.
So I'm real busy and I just don't have the time or the commitment to really get good at it. So anyway, Ryan purchased this steel guitar about 2 weeks before the Husfest, which is a big Scandinavian festival in Minot, North Dakota that Ryan plays at almost every year. And he wanted me to learn a couple of songs to play on stage. And so I had about 10 days to practice,
yeah.
learn, I should say, from just him and I. We didn't have anybody that knew how to play the steel to teach me. So a lot of YouTube videos and a lot of just playing around with it,
yeah.
and see what sounded right. So we managed to get down two songs.
One was Faded Love.
I heard that one.
She ended up, you know, yeah. kind of... doing the fill-in type stuff, you know what I mean,
yeah.
with the pedal steel. And then City Lights was another one that she ended up...
That's the one, yeah, City yep. Light, yeah. And I almost heard the beginnings of a steel ride on there. You kind of started on it.
Well, here's what we were doing, and I can't remember the recording program that I have, Adam, but I could edit just like what you're probably doing with this stuff
yeah.
here, too. I could edit and do whatever, but I'm sitting on the side of her... holding up letters of paper, A, B, you know, this.
Nice.
And then I'm telling, pointing this way and doing a D or whatever, you know. So
wow.
it's just crazy how I got her to do that, you know,
yeah.
on a recording. But she did. But whenever, of course, whenever we get in front of people, I wouldn't be able to do that. So we really had to practice to get her to to know how to...
It's a difficult instrument to learn because you're coordinating your hands and your knees and your
right.
feet. So it's definitely going to take some practice, and that's Ryan's dream, is that when we retire, he's going to have a family band that he could take on the road.
Well, I think it's already beginning here.
Yeah.
I see it. Yeah, and you know, I want to mention, so you just mentioned the Scandinavian
mm-hmm.
festival. So when you go there, are they saying, hey, we want you to bring the Métis style and kind
right.
of celebrate that a little bit,
yes.
educate on that? Is that what that's about?
Yes. I have no idea why they actually had a interest in me to go to a Scandinavian festival. However, my name was brought up. And I'm glad that I've had the opportunity because it opened the doors for a lot more for me as well. Because
right.
It brings people from all over the world, you know. It draws people in from all over the world, and that's where I met Frank and Karen Smith,
wow.
you know, and from Music Ranch Montana. So that's really it opened the doors for me, and I want to thank the people at Norse Husfest Festival for
yeah.
actually inviting me, and now Frank and Karen for inviting me to Music Ranch Montana.
Well, Frank told me. And Frank is the owner of Music Ranch Montana, for those listening. And he told me that you just had a way about you. The first time he saw your show, he said you went out into the crowd. You know, the way you were interacting and loved people. And then you combine that with your onstage talent and what you're doing. And then the educational aspects
right.
with the Métis sound and what you're doing on the fiddle
mm-hmm.
that's unique.
Right.
I mean, Frank was so impressed, and of course you brought that here to Music Ranch, and now talk about what you're doing now where you're out traveling around with this truck.
Well, I got to give a lot of credit to Frank and Karen for helping us out with this music truck, but anyway, I pitched him it was actually watching you, Adam, the very first time we seen you here, you have a truck that you pull that says Music Ranch a trailer, an RV type trailer, but it opens up into some sort of a concert thing that you could provide for people and entertainment for people. I seen that, and I said, Frank, I said, is that your vehicle or is that Adam's? And he said, yeah, Adam takes that and he takes it on the road. And I said, I was looking for something like that. And I pitched him, I gave him the information of how we seen this Christmas train, holiday train. Coming in, we seen it. First, I've heard of it going into Winnipeg, into Canada, traveling, making this huge thing in Canada. But they had a tour in Canada. But it actually came into North Dakota, Minot, North Dakota. So what they do is, and you know, it's maybe a couple weeks into December, they drop the huge Christmas train comes. They drop the door, and they're playing Christmas songs for you. And it's just at the spur of the moment, you know. So, and I pitched them that, and I said I would like something like that, so I could bring to our maybe rural communities, people that can't get to the cities. And maybe just who can't afford it or whatever, and we bring the music to them.
Yeah.
And the following year, whenever I came back to play Music Ranch, he said, Ryan, I got this for you.
He designed
the truck to do this and to bring music out on the road for people.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have been able to do this without Frank or Karen, I'll be honest with you, because it's just like a dream come true. So it is a truck. It's a music truck that we have. It's fully loaded with speakers and our amps, whatever it takes.
Yeah.
The drop of the trailer or the drop of the side door, which converts into a stage, basically, we're able to provide music for people. So we've used it now maybe at about 3 or 4 different events. We just got it just this year, and it's just a nice truck. So I think the word is spreading out there, and people wanting us to go and play for different events now, and I'm glad. Yeah.
Well, no doubt. I mean, I saw Facebook Live, the first time I saw y'all playing on it, and I'm just looking at the lights and the way it looks and set up. If that thing rolled into any town, drops down and your band starts playing, I mean, you're going to draw a crowd, and that is really, that's your vision, that's Frank's vision, that's the vision of what Music Ranch is all about and what you've been about for so long, and that's really exciting that y'all get to do that.
So and I know I might be speaking a little bit prematurely here on this decision, but I know we are also talking about, you know, how we have the Music Ranch Montana. We're actually thinking about and having the conversation with Frank about converting even our festival to Music Ranch North Dakota.
Not the festival, but the venue.
The venue is part of
our ranch is called the Maple Sugar Ranch, and it's named after a fiddle tune. And so when we purchased our ranch, we got a big sign made, and it just became the Maple Sugar Ranch. But now we've been doing a lot of partnership with Music Ranch Montana.
Yeah.
And Frank and Karen have been really supportive with all of Ryan's music and everything that we do at our ranch. I don't know if you are familiar with Karen and Frank, but their Music Ranch Montana is on their personal property, built it with their personal money and time and effort. And so our Maple Sugar Ranch is structured very much the same. It's on our private land. We took money out of our pocket, and then a whole lot of community love came together and helped us build it. But it's structured very much like Music Ranch Montana. I think that really meant a lot to Frank that somebody did something very much like him and Karen.
Y'all have that in common. Who are some of the folks that have come up for the festival and played? Some of the other groups?
Some of the artists that we have had, we've had Mo Bandy. We've had Mo Bandy quite a few years. He's just a class act. We love Mo, and the crowd really loves him. He puts on an amazing show. We've had Mark Chestnut.
The Bellamy Brothers.
Those are some of the headlining artists.
Golly.
Yes.
But we also bring in a lot of artists, local artists, who we just have a lot of talent in the Turtle Mountains. We bring in a lot of Indigenous artists from Canada.
Right.
And non-Indigenous artists.
Yeah.
our entertainment there is just known as some of the best in festival country, so to speak.
Absolutely.
Many people that come say that it's the best music of any place that they've been.
I mean, when you're saying Bellamy Brothers, I've never even seen them live and always wanted to. And then you've had them at on your farm playing. That is so cool, right? Wow. And so I can see how Frank would see, you know, I mean, y'all are doing essentially what he's been doing here for 15-ish years, right. I believe. So that's really cool. Well, the interesting thing, you mentioned that day that you saw me setting up and you came out. Do you know, I didn't know what was going on. That Music Ranch trailer was here, and I was here. I was staying in a hotel with my family, and we had a show here. And Frank, one day, asked me if I would be willing to go to the music store and get some sound equipment for the ranch to put in that trailer to do some kind of a hootenanny little music party out in the yard. And I thought that was quite odd. I was like, well, I mean, he's got a barn over here, but... Okay, and I'll do anything for Frank, you know. So I said, absolutely. So I said, well, what do you want specifically? He said, oh, whatever you think would make good music out of there, you know. And he said, y'all can play, and maybe some other people, Keplins, and they. So that day, I was just setting up in the yard to basically do a little, you know, music party in the yard. I had no idea we would be traveling with that thing. So he was. If he told you, yeah, Adam's going to pull this thing around, I mean, he had that in mind, and I didn't know that he had it in mind. It was months before I actually was driving that thing.
Right.
So that's just kind of how he works. And, you know, it's – I think we can both agree we've both been blessed with opportunities through the Music Ranch. And that's why it's so fitting that we're doing this podcast here right now. So I wanted to ask you one more thing because I – well, maybe more than one more thing. We keep going, but I think people listening, and I know myself, I'm very ignorant on the backgrounds of a lot of the native, you know, the names and like when you say Métis, it wasn't until I got up here I'd never even heard of that before down where I live, North Carolina, Tennessee, those areas, and so forgive my ignorance and forgive the ignorance of those who may be listening. Can you explain the background of the Métis?
So the Métis are a unique mix of indigenous and European ancestry, but they also have to have lineage along the Red River. So not just anybody that is of mixed race is Métis.
Yeah.
They've established a unique culture, unique traditions, unique language. And so they really didn't fit in indigenous world or in Caucasian world or European world. So they created a lot of their own traditions.
Yeah.
They're really well known throughout Canada. And they're actually, Métis is a race up there that people can identify with. And,
yeah.
You know, they're nationally recognized. Not so in the United States. So in the United States, you either choose that you're Caucasian or that you are a citizen of a certain tribe.
Federally recognized tribe.
I got you. Yeah.
But for us, Ryan and I are recognized or were enrolled members of the Turtle Mountain Chippewa tribe.
You. Yeah.
But many of our traditions and practices are of the Métis culture as well. So we practice both cultures, we identify with both cultures, and we just embrace anybody that does the same. It's just an amazing, very rich culture that we have. We grew up with a lot of food and music-based gatherings, lots of kitchen parties, lots of family coming over. We never used to lock our door. People just come over and they start playing music. And so our kids grew up with this music.
How many kids?
We have 8 children.
Wow.
We actually used to have run a nonprofit cultural dance group. They were called Lefty's Little Steppers. They were a square dance team. Jigging is the cultural dance of the Métis people.
It's
kind of a step dancing.
Yeah.
competition dance.
Yeah, sometimes a competition dance. But we would bring them, we would travel all throughout Canada with them, and they would perform and do really well. They were pretty well known. But we had our personal fiddle player right with us, so that was real handy.
Yeah, that helps.
Yeah. Well, to even hopefully make a long story short here, my mom was born in Russell, Manitoba, my mother. So back in 1935, well, whenever she reached 2 years old, which my mom's mother back then, my grandma, died of TB.
Hmm.
So in 37, my grandfather then decided to bring my mom from Russell, Manitoba to where we reside now in the Turtle Mountains. So back then, in the 40s, you had people, Adam, crossing this border back and forth, you know, from North Dakota to Manitoba or Saskatchewan. You know, same thing with coming through the border here at Manitoba, because I know we have Métis people right to the north of us here.
Yeah.
So you had people that were traveling back then, you know, that really didn't care about the borders. It just was open to anybody, and they were free to go whenever, you know. So, but that's just the way it was. And my mom just happened to stay stationary in North Dakota, right where we live today. So, you know,
a funny story about that is his mom's name is Martha, and she worked for the government and retired through the government. And when she went to collect her Social Security, they said she couldn't because she wasn't a citizen.
Are you serious?
And my parents used to travel with me as I would entertain in Canada, because I'd do a lot of traveling.
Yeah.
And whenever 9/11 hit, she wouldn't dare step across the border because she didn't know if they would allow her to come back because she was considered a Canadian citizen rather than a U.S. Because
when she was two, she was born.
Yes.
Right. Or when she was born there and they moved to
the
U.S.
Yeah.
Wow.
She didn't want to be caught up there and not be able to come home, so she didn't even take a chance of coming to watch me and go play in Canada because she was afraid of that.
Until she had to travel to Minneapolis to get her citizenship. And
yeah.
But that was the funny story is that was after the fact, after retirement.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Which was funny, you know, it was after retirement. You think that they would have had it all figured out by then, but apparently not.
Well, and you said y'all, it was just easy. I mean, how close are you to the border?
We're 10 miles away from the Canadian border.
Back then, it was just a road, and it was just you go.
Yes.
There's nobody there.
Yes.
There was no, okay. So why would she?
Yes. Yeah. So it was just a matter of which side of the border I'm really on here, you know, because if my mom would have stayed in Canada, yes, I would have been Métis, that's for sure. They recognize the Métis up there.
Yeah.
The U.S., they don't recognize Métis at all, so that's why we're identified as Chippewa.
And that's probably why the term isn't so widely known.
Yeah, maybe. Wow. Now, what's the, is there a French connection as far as the music? Because you were talking about there's kind of, you can fiddle with some of like those New Orleans guys and stuff.
Yeah.
And is there, can you explain that?
I know just bits and pieces, and I can't, you know, one day I was jamming with a person that was playing the Cajun fiddle.
Yeah.
And we got together and we started sharing different languages. Well, how do you say this? How do you say, you know, how do you say grandma, cook'em? How do you say grandpa? It's mushroom, you know, uncle's monok. You know, how do you say bird? Atwaizon. You know, everything just kind of mingled in together. But originally, his ancestry back in the day, now I don't know how long this was, came from Canada. But for some reason, the leaders at that time kicked out the Canadians of them, and they swung out from the West Coast some way, and it ended up down in...
Yeah. Many of the French-Canadian settlers that were in Canada at that time, there was some dispute with the government, and they fled for safety down to the Louisiana area.
Okay, yeah.
And so our connection with the... French-Canadian settlers, or those are the settlers that often married into the Cree or Anishinaabe indigenous people. And so a lot of their culture came into the mix of the Métis culture, and then as well as the Louisiana people had the French Canadian part of that brought down there. So when Ryan was saying that he got together with one of the Louisiana folks that happened to be in Minnesota, we were at a festival together. They sat down and they knew many of the same tunes. You know, they could play music like they had been playing music together their whole lives. So it was pretty interesting.
Have you had rubaboo? Rubaboo is a soup, you know.
Yeah, we've
had rubaboo. We have rubaboo where we're at too, you know. So it was just like, you know, distant relatives or something, because they knew so much about us and we knew so much about them. Mm-hmm.
Well, so, I learned from Nashville city history that the first non-native guy that was hanging around there was a French-Canadian fur trapper named Timothy Demumbrian. Mm-hmm. There's a street named Demumbrian. It's right there. The Country Music Hall of Fame is on Demumbrian. Mm-hmm. And he actually traveled. I mean, the guy was all over the U.S. in the 1700s. And the stories that I'm a part-time tour guide in Nashville, so mm-hmm. I've learned all this stuff. And the interesting thing about him is he had so many kids. I mean, this guy had girlfriends in every town, and he had kids. And his family lineage is massive. He's like the Wilt Chamberlain of the 18th century. And I just, if there was a bunch of these kind of guys going around, I mean, it's no telling who all the connection could be. But that's interesting. And maybe he's a distant relative there.
It may be. That's a funny story. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's got a statue even in Nashville. And each brick outside the statue has names of descendants, and it's just bricks everywhere. I mean, these descendants are all over the place. So he created his own nation, I think. But yes. Timothy Demumbrian, you should look that up sometime.
We'll have to do that.
But that's fascinating.
One of the things that I was going to read to you is somebody, I mean, you can include this or you cannot, but I wanted to read to you one of the articles that one of our vendors wrote about the festival, and kind of give you a good idea. So this is she's a vendor, but she's also a journalist. And after she attended our festival, she just wrote a real nice post about the festival.
Nice.
And she just really summed it up real well. And I'll read that to you.
Her
name is Jody Ray Ingstead, and this is what she wrote. As we took off today with our Monkey Balls trailer from the greatest weekend of the summer, we processed all that we experienced at the Maple Sugar Ranch. The music created a common fellowship void of politics, religion, and other subjects that divide. Instead, the congregation was oozing in unity. The land was vast and beautiful. Watching so many children actually playing and interacting together, injecting hope for humanity. We saw none of them on cell phones playing cold games. We witnessed collaboration, problem solving, and laughter. Some rode bikes, popping wheelies, while others played King and Queen of the Hill on the straw bales. A game of prairie basketball was happening even as the headliners played tunes magnificent. The Ivan Flett Memorial Dancers moved spirits. Gosh, the vision of them dancing in an extremely real-life version of a dream. The clapping by the audience equates into love. Canadians and Americans standing for each other's national anthems. Men moving their hats and placing their hands on their hearts made tears pond. Mm. The security crew, top notch, and the garbage collectors and the family doing maintenance now hold very special places in our hearts. You create a safe place for all that to happen for all of us, Ryan Kiplin and Jen. We recognize and are so grateful for all it took to provide this sacred time for us to enjoy. Rest now. Your family is anointed to do phenomenal things. Kindly, the Monkey Ball Gypsies, Tim and Jody Ray Ingstead.
Oh my gosh. What a heartfelt, sincere thing about your festival.
Yeah.
And honestly, amazing. Just it sounds like an extension of who y'all are.
Yes.
That's what it seems like. Because that's wherever the Kiplins are, that is what you bring. That's what you bring to every situation. I can't think of a better way to wrap this up. Yeah, that's awesome. Thank y'all for doing this with me.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you're welcome. And we sure appreciate you inviting us to do this.
Oh my gosh, yeah. it's an incredible honor, and I learned a lot, and I sure appreciate it, and thank you for going out there and just playing that fiddle and never giving up on that dream.
Well, the same with you, yeah. Adam. I know you do a heck of a job yourself with your family.
Oh, you and Amy. So, Amy's voice is just amazing.
She just absolutely loves you guys' act. So
thank you.
I'm with her too. So.
Well, I appreciate it. Well, we're gonna hop off here. I think Mo Bandy's coming in. He's got a show tonight here at the Music Ranch, and then y'all have a big show tomorrow night as well. And so we're excited about all this.
Right. Good deal. Folks, and another thing before we get off, I'd like to mention that I have a website.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's www.ryankeplin.com. I also have a Facebook page. It's Ryan Keplin. Just look me up and do some following there, or you could follow us on the Ryan Keplin Summerfest page as well. So just look us up and you'll see a lot of neat things happening there.
And we're hoping 2022, you've got the fest back.
Yes.
Yeah. So 2022, y'all make your plans and try to come be a part of this. She just read that article, and that sounds like something I really want to be a part of and enjoy all these families playing. I got these two kids that are just bouncing around the place. They need to join these other kids and start playing on the playground.
Right.
So anyway, thank you so much.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Thank you, Adam.